Odd Girl Out, written by Elizabeth Jane Howard and read by Eleanor Braun.
Part 1. Of course I don't mind, my darling, of course I don't. She wore the top half of his pyjamas and was putting cherry jam on a piece of toast. She thought for a moment and then added, It will be lovely for me to have someone to talk to while you're in London. Edmund Cornhill looked at his wife for some time without replying. At moments like these, he told himself, his customary feeling of devotion for her was shot with something positively erotic. What he liked about her, he went on to himself. He was a man of incessant internal words, few of which reached the drum of human ear. Was the way in which he always contrived to be rational about any sacrificing attitude he called upon her to make. She did not simply say that something would be all right. She said why it would be, and then, of course, it nearly always was. She was in bed, a place that he felt sure most wives didn't occupy often enough. He never let her get up in the mornings until he'd either set out for London or otherwise begun his day. "Stripes suit you," he said. "Do they? Or it may be the red and blue that's so becoming. You remind me of one of those delightful pre-war plays when the girl stays the night unexpectedly." She said instantly, as he knew she would, "I love blue." "She's been ill, or at least that's what it sounded like. I thought you said that Clara said she just needed a rest." "She did say that, but she talked away about strain and needing a change, and the line kept fading out." "Where did she telephone from?" "Lucerne. But she wasn't staying there, she said. She was on her way to Paris." "Goodness," said Anne politely. Anne had been married to Edmund for nearly 10 years, and the very faint spark of curiosity she had earlier evinced about Edmund's ex-stepmother's whereabouts had long since died. She was, Anne felt, bound to be somewhere, and, as very little experience had shown, almost certain to be on her way to somewhere else. One could not keep up with her unless one wanted to a great deal more than Anne had done. But Edmund did care. In an odd and rather touching way, regarded his fleeting and attenuated relationship with her as some kind of heraldic feather in his cap. Whenever Clara came to England, he always had tea with her at Claridge's. He sent her a fiendishly expensive Christmas card every year, and faithfully executed any of the dreary commissions which in her huge writing on beautiful postcards she exacted from him. He called her Clara, and she called him darling. "Do you remember that parrot we had of Clara's?" He straightened up with the breakfast tray that he'd been removing from the bed. "Of course I do. Why?" "Nothing. I just remembered how bored it was, that's all." "Parrots are bored. It was nothing to do with Clara." She started to say that of course she hadn't meant that, when a scratching, as delicate as it was authoritative, interrupted them. Edmund opened the door, and Ariadne made her customary graceful and noiseless entrance. She was black, and so seethingly pregnant that her body reminded one of a small muff into which somebody had crammed their hands in a vain effort to stop fidgeting. In spite of this, she leapt lightly onto the bed and fell upon her side within reach of Anne's hand. Anne stroked her neck, and she began to examine the end of one paw with critical care. "When are you going to do it?" Anne asked her softly. But Ariadne merely shut her juicy eyes. "As long as it's not on our bed," Edmund said as he went to run his bath. He said this every morning now, but neither Anne nor Ariadne took the slightest notice. While Edmund was having his bath, Anne lay wishing he'd let her get up first. She hated wasting any of a beautiful morning in bed, and so she made lists with her mind rambling lazily over the unrelated words as she wrote them on the back of Edmund's wine merchant's catalogue. Muscari, she wrote. They'd not really liked being under the cedar. It was far too dry for them. If she wanted drifts of blue under the cedar, she would have to make do with bluebells. But then bluebells were really their best in woods.